inevitably we all fall into this, like, oh, okay, now we're back into, like, a, oh, this is a meeting, and then we were just wondering, like, okay, well, what do we do? How do we kind of do that? How do we still extract the richness of a message without falling into that mode? So,
yeah,
I guess breaking with, like, patterns, I guess?
Yeah, I actually wouldn't mind talking about that, just because we're bringing this up.
Yeah.
I think that we are all people who, by default, we have a propensity of just acquiring traditions and becoming traditional and habitual because it's easy.
Yeah.
You just follow the program and do the same thing over and over again. And that's the Christian service today. You know, on Sunday, for thousands of years, they've been meeting that way. And and when you do that, you really don't need the Spirit that much. In fact, you kill the Spirit. And so rituals, you know, formalities are all traditions.
Hmm.
And now, if you want to just break tradition for the sake of breaking tradition, that's not good. That's kind of meaningless. So we're not trying to do that. But what we want is really an enjoyment of the Lord together like this, in a very living, very spontaneous, and informal, right? Real, free way.
Yeah.
Right. That freedom of the Spirit, the newness of the Spirit, is such a big part. Should be such a big part of our gathering, of our community experience. So, in the local churches, we also build traditions.
Right.
We inherit them and we perpetuate them. And one of those traditions are the tradition of our meetings. So, you know, on Lord's Day, this and that. Now, then you say, how do we break out of those traditions? I would say the only way to break out is to break out. But you don't, you know, in the old days, we did that. And somehow, we didn't do it in a, you know, in a good way. And so, we did some crazy stuff, and just to be crazy.
Right.
And it didn't really work, because we were breaking the tradition, not with the Spirit, but with the flesh, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's even worse. So the only thing really that can overcome traditions and rituals and that is a very living Spirit,
yeah.
A very rich Spirit, and a very exercised Spirit. Let's not talk about the big meetings on Lord's Day, Sunday morning. Let's just talk about this, you know,
yeah.
The home meeting.
Yeah.
I have found that many, many home meetings in the churches have totally fallen into a program,
mm-hmm.
a tradition. So it's kind of like tonight. So you come and you mill around, you know, you eat. That's still pretty good, you know, because you're not getting into anything spiritual per se. You're socializing, and that was enjoyable, you know. Am I right?
Yeah.
Then someone like Paul says, "Now, saints, tonight, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
We're here to meet, you know, as if meeting has not begun. Now we really need to begin the meeting now." All that doesn't count. Now, please drop what you're doing and all sit around somewhere and let's meet. Now meeting begins. Now what do you do to make the meeting begin? Oh, obviously you have to sing a song. So you see the point?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone starts thinking, what song? And no one has prepared a song. And yet the two brothers pull out their guitars and start tuning. And everyone's kind of nervous. What are we going to sing now? No one is particularly inspired. Let's just sing the good old,
just taste and see, or whatever, the standard that you can just. You see tradition, and then after the singing, you're kind of silent and have to keep the meeting going, and so you scramble for the next song, and so it goes, and after the song, a couple of songs or something, and a little groaning or whatever, a little trying to repeat some lines in the song, not livingly, but just kind of in a rote manner. Now we need to read some verses. Or what have we prepared? Or read this book, or read that chapter, or read something like that. Now, none of these are bad. It's not my point. The point is, it has become the necessary items to keep us meeting. And so we do something like that. And frequently, without that, I'm talking about reading the Bible or reading something, we can lead as if. Now, don't take me wrong. Absolutely, do not take me wrong. Even the Bible can become a crutch. You see what I'm saying? Anything can become a crutch without the Spirit, and without kind of an overflowing of the Lord, of the riches of the Lord that you have experienced and enjoy, and this and that, And so, in place of that, a formula has to do the job. And so, we have to read something, and then let's go around. You read one sentence, you read one, and then whatever it is. And then after that, we're supposed to talk about it now. And actually, very few people want to talk about it, or know what to talk about it. Or have gotten into it, so this all that again, this awkward kind of a silence and waiting, and meanwhile, when all this is going on, people start looking at their watches, when would this thing end? And I wish we can get to the dessert time when we start to socialize and make small talk. That's much more enjoyable. This thing is. Begin becoming excruciating, And so, but the tradition we must maintain. We cannot stop until 9 o'clock. So, about 35 minutes to go. 35 minutes to go. So, how are we going to fill this 35 minutes? So, some brother like Paul or some others is forced to say something because no one else will say something. And so they kind of try to churn the water and. Say something to kind of keep the thing moving, Then after he finished, no one will pick up the ball, and again more silence, and then eventually somebody eke out something. And anyway, you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Just go on like that, and at the end, finally someone say, okay, let's sing this and that. So, well, we all realize what that means. That means the meeting is almost over. We sang usually a little bit more release way when we know things is going to be over. So we sang, let's head for dessert. And suddenly the whole place exploded in conversation, in laughter, in all of this, while the 1 hour or whatever time that we were meeting, it was like silent, pulling teeth, and all of that. Am I describing something you don't know? And this is rather universal, rather universal. So, how are you going to break out of that? Well, the first thing is we all have to have a share our responsibility to break out of that.
Mm-hmm.
But as I said, not by doing something deliberately funny or different, because that will become old also. I remember in the old days we were so desperate to not be religious, we became even more religious. We had the Lord's table in the home, and pretty soon the brothers start putting their feet on the table, the Lord's table, and think we don't want the tradition of so rigid. So they start sliding and putting their feet on the table with the bread and the wine. Now, tell me, is that unreligious? I think that's a new religion. In fact, that is dishonoring the table. That is not being proper at all. So don't do that to break tradition. Okay, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about saints coming together, filled with the Spirit, full of the Lord, bubbling over, and with singing, with psalms, with songs, and if we all like this, all do this, spontaneously there will be no tradition there. So I like to say a few things about this, because this is actually so important, because that kind of meeting that I describe is actually not very pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, if it doesn't attract you, how on earth is it going to attract new people? They find you strange, or find us strange. They love the first and the last part of our time, but they don't want to like the middle part. Well, let me tell you how we meet in my home. We meet every Thursday, and I don't mean that we have the tradition or we're doing the right thing, but I'm just giving an example. We're burdened for this. We're burdened for this. And for years we met the way I describe, and like everybody else, and it's just no fun. It's just not fun, you know. And so about a year ago, we sort of made the point and sort of just happened that way. We tell each other, no. Number one, let's not call it a Thursday night home meeting. Let's even get rid of that word meeting from our thinking, from our concept. Because once you say meeting, it's going to be that.
Right.
Until you do that, you have not met.
Right.
So I say, let's get rid of the word meeting. Nothing wrong with the word, just because it has so ingrained in us. I say, you can call it, call it a hangout. Call it a party. Call it a get-together, something. Just don't call it a meeting, because it has certain connotation to us church people. All right? So Thursday night, let's go to the Wongs to hang out. Not bad. When you think that, you don't think meeting. You just think we're going to go and talk and have a good time. Am I right?
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what we should be doing.
Yeah.
And you know what? New ones like that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just go to a hangout, you know? Who doesn't want to do that? So to get rid of the idea, it's a meeting. Then, when we come together, there's no eat first, and then meet, and then eat dessert. No. The whole thing is just one thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, in this last year in our home, we maybe only when we have lots of people, you know, like this last Thursday. We have 18 people, many new ones, you know, these UCI kids. And so there's no way, so we have to meet around, at the living room.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, all our Thursday night gatherings, we never leave the table, the dinner table, never. We never leave it. And we just come, and while we start to eat, you know, we usually pray a little, sing a chorus, whatever it is, and we eat, and while we eat, we start talking. Sometimes, you know, with your neighbor talking, or we say, hey, let's introduce each other, and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And hey, we don't know you, this new guy, new girl. Tell us something about yourself, school, this and that. You know, you break the ice
mm-hmm.
around the dinner table. It's a lot more easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
And when people do that, they feel they're engaged. They start to participate, you see. So it's a very relaxed kind of a thing. And while we're having that kind of a introduction or just talk, whatever, we are very keenly exercising inside.
Yeah.
We're not just talk for the sake of social. Some of us, maybe not all of us, quite exercise inside, and there is the learning. There is the real key. Keeping everything very relaxed. Very relaxed. That's important. And not loose. Yet, the spirit is very exercised. Very exercised. For what? For what he, meaning the spirit, wants to do that night. And you say, how do you know what the spirit wants to do that night? Well, we don't have a book that we read. We don't have something. We just look to the Lord. Sometimes, through some utterance or saying from a certain one, we just felt, let's talk about that. And we will all talk about that. That's when we start bringing out the Bibles.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Let me see what we talked about this last Thursday. What was the subject? Last Thursday, a young sister, she just, when we were almost finished eating, she said, you know, I like to ask the question about, there's a verse in Romans 1 about how you can, through the creation, you can know the divine power, you know, that verse, and the divine characteristics, and the eternal power, that no man can have an excuse, something like this, you know. And that fantastic question,
mm-hmm.
because we have some new ones there. This is a great gospel, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so we seized on that. And that didn't come from Paul, you know, mm-hmm. or from me, you know. It came from a young sister. And we took that and we began to talk about it.
Yeah.
And I say something, and she says something, he says something, And before long, we were all engaged in that discussion of creation. We talk about creation, all the things. And it was the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
It was a marvelous gospel there.
Yeah.
And nobody didn't look at the clock. Nobody wishes over.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone is just glued to the subject matter, and it was. And then at a certain time, we felt good enough. We don't want to inundate and overdo this thing. You know, sometimes you get going, you cannot shut off the faucet. You know, you drown people. So we just good enough. We pull back and. And I don't think even that time, spontaneously we have some prayer. We didn't say, now let's pray.
Mm-hmm.
Spontaneously, we thank the Lord for this, and we thank the Lord, and this, that, this, and the other. And then that was it. And it was not a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a continuation. The whole night was one big together,
yeah.
You see? and then when we were eating, the conversation continued, you know, over ice cream and cookies, and, you know, people linger and this and that. That's enjoyable.
Yeah.
And people want to come back to that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So how to have this kind of gathering with spontaneity, with in a relaxed manner, even with surprises, you know, that you don't know what will happen next, but yet not something you sort of trying to break tradition by creating another one. But that only, the only thing that will work is people, us, exercising the spirit, living, not going by the program. You see, I will tell you, this kind of informal meeting requires more of you than a formal one. The formal, you just follow the rules. I mean, it's dead, but at least you know what is going to happen next, and you don't need to know that. This kind of meeting, oh, I tell you, it's a lot of exercise, and not just one person, a number of us who have a little bit more spiritual weight or experience takes more lead to guide everyone into it. Now, another thing I want to tell you, the best meeting is when you participate. So a very important thing in this kind of hangout or gathering is everyone open their mouth. Now, I don't mean necessarily in prayer, because some are gospel friends, but to get them to talk, to say things. So this kind of thing called question and answer works all the time. What do you think that forces him to think and to say something? Once he says something, he already feels he's part of the group. He's part of the group now. You see? So learn, not just you hog the time and you become the speaker. Give others time and kind of get them to say something. That takes some skill. When you're not putting pressure on them, and yet at the same time you're trying to draw them out. So we need to learn that, to do that also. Now, one more thing is, I feel, and I'm talking to him on this subject here, I really feel that amongst us, there's one area that we can really improve on, really, and that is the area of singing and psalming. You know, actually in the Bible, there, in the New Testament, this occupies a big part of the Christian gathering, or even the Christian life for that matter, is psalming, is singing. Somehow that gets you into the spirit, and it brings joy to you, right? Singing always brings you joy. And we don't sing enough. And I think, not just in the meeting, we don't sing enough in our daily life. So when we come, we're not used to singing, and we have to now sing, you know, like this Christian Sunday morning service. Our church, in the olden days, we sang a lot more. And we were flooded with the Spirit. And today, a lot of these supplement songs came out of that time. That shows you, it's an overflow. It's a product of the kind of overflow. So I feel we need to sing a lot more. I told him I just caught the bug of the ukulele. Me. So I'm into ukulele now.
You're playing it?
Yeah. Well, let's not get too much into that. I have a lot to talk about. You know, this little toy of the ukulele is making a phenomenal comeback now, globally, crosses culture lines. And the good thing about the ukulele, I'm not here to promote ukulele, but I am promoting a little bit, is a much easier, a much more manageable instrument than the guitar. When you cannot handle the guitar with two strings less, it's a lot more easier. So for people like me who are not very musically, who are musically challenged, that is a much more less intimidating thing. And yet it can make the sweetest sound, and that's all you need to sing. That's all you need to sing. Just strum along and you can sing. So my point is this. My point is we need to fill our life with music, the Lord's music. And when we're together, singing is not just a part one, you know. Singing is just what we do. And a lot of our gathering on Thursday night breaking into songs in the middle of something. Someone is so exercised, they just break into song, a chorus here, a chorus there. Sometimes we sing a whole hymn, but many times it's just a chorus here, chorus there. And sometimes we just became absolutely crazy and drunk in the spirit. And even with some new ones with us. And whether they're used to it or not, they see these people are really happy and filled with the Lord. So I think this is a very big area that we need some breakthrough in. And we don't have to have these dead and deadening sessions once a week that even when you think about it, you dread, you know. When you're preparing the salad to bring to that home meeting, you already don't want to go, you know, because it's going to be another night of whatever. And it need not be like this. It need not be like this. Sometimes the whole night, we would someone share some sick relative or some situation. We all start to pray. You know, there's no start, no ending, no meeting. Yeah. You don't do this in this meeting. It's you go back and read Brother Lee. That's what he was talking about. Full of shepherding each other, full of mutuality. No need to be all on one subject. We're great at that in the recovery. We're trained to, you know, focus, contentful. But we lost the ability to be spontaneous, to meet needs, which is another thing. These gatherings are not to have good meetings. These gatherings are to meet needs of human beings, including ourselves. And if you are not happy after that evening, that means your need is not met. Even you are not happy. That time was not successful. It's just another meeting. Thank you for asking that question. Thank you.
So follow up to that question, because we've been having that kind of this back and forth a lot in San Francisco. There's a lot of younger or working people in San Francisco. But we touched on the vein that, you know, kind of in the Gotterdam way, that the group meetings are really for perfecting, you know, and he talked about, and, you know, a lot, even not so focused on the shepherding, nourishing side, that should be done on the one-on-one, assuming that gets done. But the group meetings kind of really are ideally for the perfecting, and we caught on to that kind of burden, and we've been trying to facilitate an environment that would be healthy. But once we grabbed onto that burden, the religious nature. Because what are you gonna? How do you get perfected? Then you have to have a life study reading, you know, so that people can speak, have content to speak. And from that point on, the meeting just you kind of came into a religious mode. And we're so before the Lord because we're like, Lord, I don't get it. But there is a burden, an undeniable burden that we want the group meetings to be, to have a direction of perfecting, mainly so that people have a habit of speaking, so that for the Lord's Day they can speak, they can stand up to speak. You know, kind of like a goal to the meeting. But it seems as if the goal has not been occurring and it has some side effects.
Can I ask a question? I'm also in San Francisco, and I've been concerned with this because I was, for me personally, I hated going to meetings. And in fact, I stopped meeting altogether for a long, long time. And then my brother always tried to get me back to go. And, you know, I was like, a meeting? No way. Especially on Friday, you know, I'm like, oh, I've got stuff to do. I hated it. I thought it was really boring. So he invited me. He's like, oh, well, you know, actually, it's really informal. So we're just eating dinner sometimes on Friday. And so I went to one of those where we just sat around the table. And it was there was no, like, meeting. And then we're just eating. And I enjoyed it. But then I don't remember what happened, but... Tim told me that it didn't work, and because I want to ask what your reason was, because it strayed from that again into the regular meetings. I'm like, okay, you know, I'm not going anymore. So I just want to kind of force him to say, like, why didn't it work?
I think to your point, Josh, like, we've had there's one group that does the normal meeting, and I think we've been experimenting a little bit with another group in the Soma area to try to get our friends from startups and tech, a much younger crowd, into some sort of, not a meeting, we try to just say gathering.
Yeah.
And for me in particular, I grew up in the church, and so I actually came in with that sort of formal mentality as well. But what's been tremendously surprising to me is formality is easy. Because you come and you know the agenda, you know the schedule. For me, it's been a challenge and a huge experience learning how to be spontaneous. Because the new ones that come in, they have no preconceptions, and so they come in with questions. And even touching a certain angle, we started reading from Matthew because one of the new ones was Catholic, and she's like, let's get into Matthew. And even looking at how we go to Matthew, bringing a lot of different angles, and even learning.
Works on the Friday, like the same format. I'm actually really curious because I was like, well, I always thought that I thought it was good, and it made me want to go, and I thought I was enjoying. And then there was some spontaneous talk of God. And maybe that was the problem. Like there was not enough, but still, as soon as we strayed away from it, I was.
Well, let me. I think it's good. It's related. So, let me try to answer this way. First of all, I'm not going to say anything to say, the God of gateway training that you have or what you're endeavoring to practice of perfecting is wrong. Okay, so don't take it that way. But I will tell you that all these. Things that are even in the books of the God of Ding Wei, the principles, the four steps, I know it all because I'm a student of it. Just like anything can be taken way too rigidly and literally. You see, you have to realize the whole thing is organic. And that is something organic, although there are certain principles that controls things, the organism. Life is unpredictable. Life is free. life is spontaneous. That doesn't mean life is wild,
right.
You see. When it says you beget, then you one-on-one or whatever, home meetings is for feeding, then group meeting is for perfecting, and prophesying meeting is for this and that. Well, those principles are really God ordained. They are absolutely right. Okay. But that's the manual. Now you're going to drive that car. You have to put that manual aside and start looking at the signs and the potholes on the street and the pedestrian who's dashed out.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go by the manual.
That's a good one, an analogy. I really like it.
Suddenly, you have to drive according to conditions.
Yeah.
But if you have never read the manual, you won't even know how to face that.
Right.
But having read the manual, now you have to drive according to the present need, then to get to your destination. And so this is exactly what's the problem, okay? So you said, I thought the group meeting is for perfecting and nothing else or something like that. Well, yes, there is a need for perfecting. And depending on how you define perfecting, the perfecting should be going on all the time. I would think that you are taking this a little bit too literally. And saying a group meeting is not successful until it does the work of perfecting. Well, then I ask you, if in the meeting, like a gathering like mine, where you have several new ones and even some that is, I'm not even sure they're saved, you know, well, how am I going to perfect them in this kind of a way, right? It's too much for them. Then what I'm to do? What is going to be a successful meeting? I say this again. We must be people-centered. We must firstly be Christ-centered. It goes without saying. We must be people-centered. Whether you're nourishing, whether you're perfecting or prophesying, even on Lord's Day prophesying meeting, I'll tell you, some saints prophesy not with people in mind, but with their prophecy in mind. Do you see the difference? Oh, I gave this wonderful prophecy that I prepared. You know, thank the Lord. Okay, that's great. But you may be happy or satisfied. I like to ask, did that prophecy minister to the needs of the saints? In your prophesying, is the goal to give this perfect prophecy, or is the goal to minister Christ with a imperfect prophecy? A big difference. It's a kind of fine line, but huge big difference. In the home meetings, group meetings, whatever meeting, our center is always on Christ. Then our center must always be on people. Now, to center on people means you have to be cognizant of the people's need.
Right.
And in every gathering, it's different.
Yep.
In this situation, the people are a little bit more advanced. In that situation, people are unsaved. You can't control that. And all you can do is do your best to meet that need. All right? So you got your brother there who has a certain kind of mindset. And he was rather happy with your kind of spontaneous get-together, then you start perfecting him or somebody. He said, well, wait a minute, I'm not coming back or something like that. Then you say, well, wait a minute, are we here just to have a successful perfecting meeting and lose people, or are we to gain people and do whatever is necessary? You see? So, I would like to suggest that you not be so straitjacketed by these so-called points of the God-ordained way. You should be free
they should help, but they should not enslave you. You follow me?
Yeah.
You're the driver. You're the driver. And you should use it to help accomplish your goals, which is to care for people.
Amen.
So I think if you can be free from, liberated from that, that will help a lot. Then you say, well, when does perfecting take place? Well, you know, a gathering of a group of people is likewise organic. Today, the need is the gospel. 6 months from now, it changes. The need is for some life matters. Then 3 months from then, the need changes again. Then it's need for some little bit more, what you call perfecting. You see, even the group, don't try to make it the same all the time. Am I right? The kid grows, you know. Even over the year, people grow. So the meeting changes. The meeting is very living. The meeting is very flexible to meet needs. And who knows how to meet needs? You have to know it. I have to know it. So we can carry on successfully. We, in our home meeting, we don't have this idea, we practice perfecting now. Because if we do, no one will come. Especially these students or new ones. They say, what are you doing? You know, they just want to have a good time, hang out, and we try to inject them some with the Lord and this. Well, perfecting, we can do it another time. We can do it in another place, another kind of situation. But not necessarily at that time. It depends on the need. The need should drive what we do, not the manual. It also depends how skillful we are. If you are a skillful person, you can do a lot of things. If you're not skillful, you have only a screwdriver in your toolbox. You can only do one or two things. I have a hammer, I have a, you know, I have all kinds of things in my box. Whatever the need is, I know what to use.
Mm-hmm.
That comes from learning. That comes from a lot of experience. And I hope you all in the in your kind of gathering would not just come and enjoy, so to speak. How about you all come to learn? And after 1 year of learning, you become better at it. You become more skillful at it. That's the only way we can multiply groups, is by spreading with people who have learned. Have you been in my group? No, you have not been in my group. You have not. You have not.
I've visited.
You visited.
Yeah.
But we've been, since we moved to Irvine, which is it's the longest place we've lived in, 17 years. Okay, that's a long, too long a time. We have always opened our homes for the gospel with students, kids, college kids, all that. We never stopped. And I can testify to you over these many years, we have perfected, not like I'm going to perfect you that kind of way,
mm-hmm.
but by learning and by other times when our group come together, like prayer on Tuesday
mm-hmm.
or other times, we would say something to help. You know, we probably shouldn't call that him. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
We learn how to do things, and I don't know how many even couples that have gone through our home. And Vicky and I take it very seriously in our talk. When we have a couple with us, our intention is to train them,
mm-hmm.
not to be with us. No, we don't want to hold on to anybody. We
right.
want to get rid of them.
Mm-hmm.
But before I get rid of them, I want to make sure they can fly. You know, when we yank them out of the nest, I want to make sure they can fly. So I don't know how many couples have been through and gone on to start their own families, their own poems and things. Mm-hmm. Another couple just started.
Mm-hmm.
Enosh and Andrew Cohen.
Mm-hmm.
We kept them with us for 1 year, quite deliberately. Quite deliberately. The newlyweds, they need to learn to function as a unit. They need to watch us. So after 1 year, they just started with another couple,
mm-hmm.
Their own group. Now I heard they have 10 people in their group. So our district grew, our district, District A, grew from 3 groups last year to now 4 groups. But I tell you, that growth is not, it didn't just happen.
Mm-hmm.
We planned it. And also, it was after a whole year of their learning, they're observing, they're being engaged. Now they know how to do the things. They go to another station. So
mm-hmm.
the perfecting is there,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Without saying it.
Okay.
I would say to perfect people to prophesy, you may do it from time to time, but you should not make that the only thing you do. Especially when you have gospel friends, new ones. So, how's that for an answer? Is that okay?
That was great. Yeah.
Yeah.
I several moments in there. I'm like, wow, that's good. Really. I really like the driving, the manual and driving.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense to me. Yeah, because you don't just read a manual and then all of a sudden go out and drive.
Mm-hmm.
You have to actually look at the signs.
Yeah.
And, you know, watch for people or.
Quick question. So this is what we've been trying to endeavor, I think, in Berkeley, to kind of break that mold. I think maybe two years ago, there was a special fellowship, an Austin reunion, on the open homes, not home meetings, but having just family time. And the key was, small is beautiful. Around the dinner table.
Because mm-hmm.
when you come, like, you know, it's a family time, you don't read something, you just get to know the person, you know. So we end up, I mean, I think a lot of the home meetings started splitting,
mm-hmm.
which was awesome. I think the students loved it, you know. Each week, we were freaked out because we're flying by the seat of our pants because there's no agenda, you know. We're just like, you know, amen. We pray desperately for it. And a lot of spontaneous fellowship came out. The students wanted to sing some hymns, and they're like, who wrote this? And we would get into the author spontaneously and find out their story. And it was really, I think it was really good. The students all enjoyed it. So we all sat around the table. I think there was, on average, last year, about 8 of us. But this year, the group doubled in size. Went to 16, 5 new ones. We can't fit around the dinner table. And I feel like, and then there was only us. And then finally a couple just joined us recently. We're like, how can we split? Because it loses that intimacy when you have that number.
Right.
You can't tell people, don't come.
Right.
But because of the sheer, I think, number, how do you, I guess, bring it, how can you bring it back to what was the small group family time?
Yeah.
And then the couple just joined us, so they're not yet ready to split anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
So then we realized when the number gets big, by default, we fall back into the kind of wrangle everybody, singing,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then go back to the meeting time because of the numbers. So now that it's increase, we're not yet able to split. How do we still, I guess, maintain the intimacy of a family time?
I love these kind of real life questions. I mean, these are really on the ground, in the trenches kind of question.
Right.
And we're facing that right now, my group.
Okay.
As I told you last week, it ballooned to 18 people, which was fantastic because it's new faces and it's just wonderful. Yet, we can no longer be at the table, and we're forced to have a little bit more of this meeting because of the size.
Right.
There's nothing you can do about it. So, I mean, after the meeting, my wife and I look at each other and say, what are we going to do? It's too big. is too big. Now, in ideal circumstances, you should split. Now, let me tell you this, this perennial question, what is the ideal size of a small group? Okay, I'm going to tell you, all right? I have the answer. The answer is that it's a range. There's no number, like magic number. If you ask me, this is just me, I would say the range, would have, let's say, six people, give or take. It could be four, you know, depending, six, all the way to 12. I say that is a comfortable range. You know, even sociologists who have studied group dynamics and this kind of thing will tell you that once you get over 10, people start disengaging.
Yeah.
You start to have two roles. All right? That's just social principles. So you don't want to go too big, beyond 12. 12 is almost like some people start tuning out. It's just the way it is. Okay? Now, unless we're all one-on-one, that's different. I'm talking when we're all in a group format. So, really, what a group should do if it grows beyond that point, let's say beyond 12, let's say 15 or something, on a constant basis, consistent basis, they really ought to think hard and talk and fellowship about how we can multiply into two groups. And if you get to 18 or something, it's unmanageable, and you do lose that intimacy.
Right.
You lose it. That's just how it is. But in your case, you don't have a couple, you don't have a nucleus that can split. All cells split in the nucleus.
Mm.
When the nucleus split, the cell splits. And so, you don't have that strong nucleus. So, you might just have to endure it. That's all I can say.
Mm-hmm.
Endure it and do your, and don't think this is forever and ever.
Right.
This is for the next period of time. Circumstances do not allow you to multiply. You have to endure. You have to bear a little bit more burden in those gatherings to make sure it does not lapse into really a rigid formal thing with so many people. You may even want to be creative to do something. You know what we did also? We split ourselves within the home.
Mm-hmm.
So you're in the living room and you're in the dining room and keep talking, you know? And that worked. So it's not like you are fully multiplied yet. You still have the sort of safety in numbers, but yet you allow participation and mutuality and intimacy and things like that. You may want to try that. From time to time, and so on. So that's what I would say. But you must have a view, say by next summer or whenever we have to split, if this number remains like this. Then you have to start planning now. Start considering who, how, when would this be ready. You know, having a group like this is like starting business. It's called enterprising. You have to have that enterprising spirit to maintain this little franchise of yours, this little McDonald's of yours. You have to enterprise it, which means managing this and that. It's not just kind of, tomorrow's Thursday, you bring salad, you bring meat, like that's your group meeting. No. So Tuesday, I don't know how you pray. Do you pray together in the church, together?
In the house.
In the homes, great. That's what we do. So I told the saints, Tuesday night prayer, you should only spend half of that time. Let's say you were together for an hour, 15 minutes. Spend 30 minutes or at the most 45 minutes to pray. Spend at least half an hour not to pray, but to coordinate for your group, new ones. How's this one doing? How's that one doing? Who's taking care of this one? Who's going to meet that one? What's the problem? You know what I mean? And then Friday, not just about food, you bring salad, but How was last week? How can we improve this week? You're enterprising. Someone is putting its brains to this thing. So when Friday night comes, it's not like, you know, except for the food. Nobody knows what's going on. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
No one is taking care of that business.
Mm-hmm.
A small group is like really like a business. You have to plan, you have to fellowship. And the Lord will always have a way. And the other thing is, two more things I would like to say. A good group, this kind of home group, should have also a lot of extracurricular activities.
Mm-hmm.
Not just Thursday night, Friday night, you know. Go to Angel's Camp, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The whole group go out to the Palace of the Arts. But I don't know what you do in San Francisco. But I'm just saying that those kind of things foster the family,
right.
and have a lot. You actually get a lot done of caring for people at those times than a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to say not group meeting.
Right.
Use the word group life.
Amen.
It's a life. It's not a meeting.
Okay.
It's not Thursday night. It's the whole week.
Mm-hmm.
So what was the other thing I was going to say? I forgot about it. So, as young adults, as those who are to carry the burden of the church, you should be doing that. I say, knowing how to behave, how to be in this kind of group situation, home situation, which is 80% of the church life, is one of the most important skills you have to acquire. When you know how to do this, wherever you migrate, you'll be useful.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't, you'll be a weight.
Mm-hmm.
Don't migrate, I would say, please. You'll become a weight, dead weight to a new situation,
mm-hmm.
you see. But if you know, you will be in demand. If you know what I mean, you'll be so useful, you see. Knowing how to operate in that environment.
Mm.
It's very exciting.
Mm.
I mean, let's get rid of all these. Let's be free.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Here's another limitation I run into is that during my daily life, my coworkers, students I work with, a lot of typical Americans, non-Asians. Then I come to the church life and the saints I'm with, and the majority are some kind of Asian ethnicity. And looking at Berkeley, I'm surprised to see in our city it's not majority Asian. But our church.
The school is.
The school?
The school, Berkeley, is
40%.
No.
50. Yeah, I think it's a little less.
Well,
it's close.
It's pretty good. Anyway.
But the ones we, so I'm just, I work all week, and I'm sure many of us work all week with lots of typical Americans. But I don't have, my view for the gospel for these ones is limited, and in my implementation is almost nothing. And I don't know if you can.
Oh, well, this is a huge subject. Huge subject. And a sensitive one.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're touching on race, which is always sensitive. So I don't think we would have the time to get fully into the matter. But I would say this, that the need to gain this kind of Americans. By the way, in this country, nationally, the statistics, today the quote-unquote white Caucasian Americans is about dipping. It's dropping. Huh? You know it's dropping. Right now, it is nationally, it still should be in the 70% linked. I heard some stats that say it's more like maybe down to high 60s. It's the trend is going down. The Hispanic population in this country is about 15 or 16%. It is now the highest, the biggest minority now, having surpassed the African Americans. The African Americans roughly have always been quite constant. It has maintained about 12%, 11, 12%. The rest, which is about 5% or whatever, are others, including the Asians, the Indians, the Middle Easterners, and all of that. So this is the rough, give you the rough. So nationally, still the great majority are the people of European descent. But the church as a rule, you cumulatively in this country, and when you add in Canada, it's even more. We do not reflect that reality. We do not reflect that demographics. Now, this is not right. This is not wrong. It is just what it is. And there's historical reasons for that. All right? And the important thing when we talk about this matter is not we've got to take away strictly the racial eyeglasses, because it would stir up a lot of, you know, feelings and so on, things that it's not good. So we need to go beyond that. Therefore, when we talk about the need and the burden to gain the so-called Caucasian Americans, we have no racial tones, no racial thoughts whatsoever in it. We've got to be pure in this matter. Mm-hmm. We have only one thought, and that is that the church as a community and a society should somewhat reflect that society's demographics. That's all. That's all. So it's really for the Lord's testimony. Now, if you look at the whole country, the distribution of the minorities are also has a pattern to it. So you go to the Midwest, you'll find a lot less Asian people. You go to the coastal places, there are a lot more, especially if you go to the really large metropolises, you'll find a lot more. And so you, especially in the Bay Area, had a long history, and that history resulted somewhat in the demographics in the church life today. And to overcome that, to correct that, is going to be very, very difficult. I wouldn't say impossible, but it's very, very challenging. I gave this matter a lot of thought. I studied this matter. And so, however, that is not to say it is impossible. We will never give up on that. So, in order to fulfill that burden, we just have to do certain things. What things, say? Well, number one, that we would not just by default give up on that segment of population. Like, it's impossible, just forget about it. I don't think you should do that, even when we're in communities or places kind of like that. People are people. Whatever color they are, they have the same problems and the same need. We should not think that way. The second thing is we have to realize to gain these folks, it takes a certain kind of way because they are raised up in a certain way. I would say it takes more time to befriend them, to build a relationship with them, to build trust, and then, you know, eventually to be able to share and to gain them.
Now, so a lot of this kind of one-on-one work that is necessary, and it usually takes some time. And then the other thing that is most challenging is how do you transition them into the church life? Because in the meeting, it's another kind of culture, you know what I mean. That's just a fact. And it is a difficult one, and I don't think there's really an answer to this. Now, again, back to Irvine and so forth. We have three languages, and in our districting, some districts has an emphasis on these typical Americans. Others are more strictly Chinese and so forth. And we don't do this for racial reasons. We do this for increase reasons. Increase. So that when you have a friend like that, or a brother or a sister like that, when you bring in, at least in that meeting, over 60% are not Asian. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
People today don't expect no Asian. That's not the society we're in. Mm-hmm. People today are more, a little bit more tolerant, shall we say, a little bit more open. So it's not like they want some pure, you know, what. But not the overwhelming majority, but somewhat the other way. Then also on campuses, I would say young people are even less concerned about race. I think so, compared to the community. So there, this kind of mix is less of a concern. So I would say our gospel on the campus, even here, we should work to bring in the non-Asian people. Today, actually, when you say non-Asian, you are not just talking about European. You're talking about a lot of Hispanic people. They are, you know, whether it's affirmative action or what, I don't know. There are a lot of them in UC. I know in UCI that's the case. Right now in our group, a number of these new ones are Guatemalans, El Salvadorians, who in their feeling they're totally all American. They're born here, you know what I mean. It's just the background is that from that source. So they're all Americans. They all think American, this and that. So so we should pay our attention to gain these folks on the campus. So campus work is very, very important. Now, one more thing is I do look to the Lord that many churches in the Midwest or in, you know, small towns and so on, that the Lord will bless them, that they can gain these people because they're surrounded by that, and they should, right? And hopefully, by their doing so, eventually there would be a little bit of a better balance, shall we say, a little better balance. That's all we can do. I used to be quite idealistic about this. I'm now more realistic about this. But that doesn't mean I'm saying it's impossible, forget about it. No, not by a long shot. We need to labor still. And you know what, today, actually, this country is wide open. Even this thought that these so-called typical Americans are not open is an absolute myth. Mm-hmm. An absolute myth. Very open, you know, especially with the recession, this great recession, with you know, all the stuff that is going on. People are actually very open, very needy. That's why BFA. That's why. And the story I just told them, you heard, you know, mm-hmm. the story about this pastor. It's one of those stories tells me there's 100 more that we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's so. We should just do our best. Yeah, do our best. Do you know the Lord's Recovery, when it began in L.A., it was almost all Asian.
Mm-hmm.
when Brother Lee came. That little church in Los Angeles, 1962, were mostly Asians. I think you can count with one hand the non-Asians. But Brother Lee, and they prayed very deliberately for the Lord to gain the locals. And then starting in 1963, the breakthrough began. And the, all of 60s were mainly gaining the Americans. And by the time when I came to the recovery of 67, 68, in that era, it was almost a very small number of people like me, you know, in the church life in L.A. The Lord did that. The Lord did that. So,
a good question. In my locality, there's hardly any young adults there.
Where are you?
Santa Clara.
Oh, Santa Clara.
So there's like maybe three of us, I think. So there's only two of us in this conference, and the other one is, he has worked in the weekends, so he cannot come. So how do we encourage, you know, more young adults to stay in this locality, and how do we attract them to come?
I'm sorry, I didn't know there's no young adults.
Very few, like just three and those.
I like to say this. Although there is a burden, quite a prevailing burden for the young adults in the recovery, and rightly so, we should be careful not to make this into a certain class of people. We're just saints. There's no label. This can very quickly have negative side effects. One adult, or you're old adult, or something. But the fact of the matter is, there are these growing ranks of saints of that age bracket who are very important to the Lord's recovery. So attention must be paid. So weekends like this are, I feel, very good. Now, when you're in a church, because of the employment base of that city, because of all kinds of reasons, there may be just a quick growth of this type of brothers and sisters. In another little sleepy town or something, there may not be. So we should not become so worried or become so concerned that, oh, we don't have an equal number, or how come we have only a handful, they have so many. I was told now in San Francisco, there's a kind of a growth of these working saints. Am I right? And some are not even living in San Francisco. They just work there. But anyway, it's just because San Francisco is an employment center, I look around, the workforce is dropping in age. And everybody wanted to live there. So spontaneously, you can't compete with San Francisco, Santa Clara, you know what I mean? And I feel you should not feel bad about that. You should not feel you're missing something because of that. If you have three, or you have five, or ten, or whatever, just let it be. So you function to the best of your ability. Then as far as mutuality and fellowship of your age group, if you don't have ones in your locality, what's wrong with you to go mix with some in San Jose and whatever's nearby, and blend that way, you know? We should not be that local, you know, about it in terms of fellowship.
Well, wondering, sorry, has a question along these lines. I was wondering if we just kind of switch gears. There's been a question I wanted to ask regarding what we talked about this morning, just, you know, the matter of who you are, knowing who you are and where you're going. You know, I think a lot of people like myself are in this situation where objectively you know who you are and you know where you're going. But there's a disconnect between your objective knowledge and your practical living today. And now, I mean, I know even doctrinally, okay, maybe I just need more of the Lord's appearing. I need more seeing, you know, then you'd be constrained by vision. Is there something that we can do or practice? I don't know. I don't know what I'm asking, but is there a better... yeah, it's hard to ask these questions and not get too much on one side, you know, like too much doing or too spiritual. Just how can we more effectively apply what we know objectively of who we are into our actual realization and living out?
Well, good question, and a legit, you know, the point that you've touched is quite the right point, and that is, how do you make what you pick up in the training, for example, all this great, high, wonderful stuff, and bring it to your humdrum 60-hour week Silicon Valley life? You know, am I right? How do you make that real in your daily living? Well, there simply is no magic answer. There is none. And also, I will tell you, it is the fact that you're bringing this up shows that it is a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
It is not easy. It's not a walk in the park. But having said that, I must tell you that it is possible. Because I've seen it. Not just only one person. I've seen it in multiple persons. I've seen ones who are going for in med school, getting their doctor, their MD or whatever it is. I've seen who have those people who are legitimately busy, you know, they have every reason to disappear. Right? They have not. And they have maintained their walk with the Lord. You know, their consecration, and it's real to them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's possible. I think that there's no substitute for exercise. Okay? Have you seen something? Cannot say you've not seen it. Now, you don't even expect, oh, just based on what you see, everything's going to be fine with me. But that's a bit of a dream. Yes, the vision you see is real. Now, it's still up to you to work that out by your exercise in your daily life. That working out simply means you have to cooperate and do your share of work to match the grace that the Lord gives you within. It involves everything from a strong resolve to take this way every day, to walk this way. It involves your determination to make decisions, daily decisions, that would line up with this vision, that would not go here or there. It involves you at the critical juncture, it involves you to deliberately prioritize your life, to put the kingdom first, which translates into readings, all the church life matters. Involves you to build up
a kind of a personal life with the Lord, including your time with Him and those kind of things. And even involves your plan, a plan, to be in His Word, like the ministry, like going to these feasts. Now, all this is exercise. They're not, God doesn't give them to you. God gave a vision to you. Now you need to do these things to make that vision you, make that vision real to you. Now, I look back in my experience, that's exactly the case. But I can also testify when I do that, and sometimes involves sacrifice, involves some persecution by my family, all kinds of things. Involves sometimes giving up an opportunity in the world that I could otherwise pursue for the sake of the church. Involves all kinds of things, you see, for me to walk this way. I can testify to you that the grace has been abundant. The matching grace has never failed me. So I live that way. Most of you don't know, you know, I trained as an architect and I worked as an architect. And then I eventually gone on to build up a business in real estate development and whatever. Because I was given that kind of a circumstance, a situation to do that. And I have this burden that not only I want to serve the Lord, but I want to be able to, at the same time, make money for the Lord, for the Lord's interest. Not everyone has that kind of opportunity, and it's not something that I would encourage you to do. But I just, it was on my lap, and I had to do something. Well, my point is this. My point is, I understand the life of a working saint. I understand the challenges. I understand the pitfalls. I understand the traps. I understand the distraction, potential distraction. I understand all the temptation of many kinds, when you're engaged in that world. I understand that. And in some ways I passed through that. And I will say that it's not always easy. No. But you just have to, for the love of the Lord, for the vision that you have seen, and be true to your consecration and endeavor by His grace to live that life. And it's possible. It's possible. You have to, for example, it's up to you to sanctify your life. I mean, your buddies can do all kinds of things in your job. You can't. And because you don't do what they do, you may be ridiculed. You may be, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There are sacrifices involved in following the Lord. And there's no getting around that. Those principles the Lord laid out, if anyone wants to follow me, he has to forsake this. That's there. There's no change. And that's the only way I know how to follow the Lord in that way. So I say cooperate with the Lord. And
so essentially, I mean would it be essentially to live it out before, like even before, or necessarily is your spontaneous living, like to, I don't want to say, you know what I mean? Like, it's not what I, it's not who I am today. You exercise it out, you exercise and I don't want to call
okay.
it self-fulfilling prophecy.
I don't think you need to worry about that. Even in fact, you don't need to worry so much about the outcome. Like, oh, am I living it out? Or, you know, that kind of a thing. You just exercise to the best of your ability with the Lord's grace that is given you. And you don't worry about the result, you know, how real this is, or, you know, what percentage am I living out, you know. You don't need to worry about that. You just be true to your consecration and to be faithful to that vision on a daily basis. And the Lord will strengthen you in your situation. Yeah. The temptation of the working life is very great.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not only one kind of temptation, all kinds of temptation. Sooner or later, you have to come to the conclusion, I'm a different kind. The sooner you arrive at the decision, the better. I'm just a different kind. I'm not the same kind,
mm-hmm.
like the worldly people. I'm a different kind. I don't live like them. I don't have goals like them. I don't have hobbies like them or whatever, you know, lifestyle. That doesn't mean words. It's some weird, odd thing. No, we're human. We're proper. We engage. And to some extent, we need to socialize what we need to do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean you become this kind of strange person. But something inside is very different, very different. They are going for it. You apparently are also going for it. But they're going for it for themselves. You're going for it for the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Well, is the meeting over? We don't need to sing a song, right? Any of you play ukulele?
No.
You do? How long have you done that?
Since I grew
up. Oh, only recently. So how do you like it?
It's fun.
It's fun, huh?
Yeah.
You do too? Just yourself, right?
It's good for more intimate settings.
Oh, yeah.
And if you get at least if you get 7 people in a meeting, it doesn't
yeah.
no longer keeps up.
I used to, when someone whip out a ukulele, and I just feel kind of, I wish it's a guitar, you know. The little, it's kind of like a little childish, a little childish, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The sound, you know, not so sophisticated. But I've changed. In a pair of good hands, this thing can blow and can do wonders. Yet everyone can play it, literally.
How are you learning?
By myself. I bought some books.
I
watched some YouTube instruction. You know, they teach you, you know, this kind of thing. Yeah, it's really not hard. I mean, everyone can play 4 chords, you know, and you can say.
Wait, there's only 4 chords that are.
No. I mean, you need a 4 chords, you can go a long way. But, you know. What time is it? It's not too bad. You sisters are all from San Jose? Some of us, and the others are from where? We're from Pleasant Hill. Okay, and where are you from? Oh, you're also San Diego. Okay, mostly San Diego.
You may own everything
in San Diego. I was thinking about the Friday night home meeting. I'm thinking about our young people's meeting and how they're a lot of times really also, you know, very scheduled and. So last young people's meeting I was at, we read something and then it was like our goal was to come back together and speak. And so, okay, let's practice speaking. You say something, you say something in our little group.
Yeah.
And the girls would just read nothing that meant anything just to go. You know, okay, I'll say something. And so I just felt like, oh Lord, this is not, you know, I find this boring and not helpful. Why would the young people want to come to this? And how can we help them? How can it be something of, you know, enjoyable and meet their needs?
Well, I'm not, I don't work with young people, so I'm not an expert in this. I think we have to be careful in raising up of young people, not to overtrain them, burden them. We all like to see them speak and be living little saints, you know. There's a time of life for young people. So if they're not that exercised like this or whatever, I don't think we should be too bothered. They're just where they are. And if we can prompt them to do some more, that's good. If not, it's okay. These are high schoolers, right? Or junior high, yeah. I don't have that much experience in this country with this age group. But I, you know, sometimes we train up these very nice, goody good church young people. They know everything, but actually they have really not touched much. And one day some of them will turn and say, forget this. I've had enough. Do you know what I'm saying? So we should not be too worried whether they're doing the things we expect them to do.
Right.
The important thing is that we care for them,
mm-hmm.
and they attach to us,
mm-hmm.
and we, whether they perform in the way that we want them to perform or not, that there is that care.
Right. I would rather just speak with them and have them ask questions and just
yeah.
But I guess it's kind of just set up that way.
Yes.
Go. So actually in San Jose we're working on changing the trend of things. And we have a fellowship every Sunday morning where we train fellowship regarding the young people's service. And it's really been a struggle to get out of this formality with the young people. But it's something that it really requires a lot of one-on-one labor. And like you said, picking up the burden, just the function, especially us young single saints, our function is to go pick up a young person or two and call them at least once a week, Facebook them at least twice a week. You know, I think we all kind of do that already. But we're really in the midst of fellowship, of changing, because we're realizing that they're not staying. Even most of us, a lot of us, didn't stay and ended up coming back for the Lord's mercy, you know? So we just have to realize, what's happening isn't working, but this is where we're at, so what can we do to function to, quote-unquote, supplement? Because we're not brothers, we're not the ones who make the decisions, so as sisters, we just function according to life and pray.
Good answer. I think that's very good. I mean, that was just one meeting, but you can do so well, or some summer school approved. I don't know what you're talking about, but you have so many opportunities outside of that environment to interact with them, take them out, you know, hang out with them, and care for them.
That's right.
That counts actually a lot more.
Yes.